overcast tonight with some scattered outbreaks of light rain. Lowest temperatures 11 degrees.
Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies for driving it through the afternoon. It's Thursday the 14th of July. I'm Dave Kelly and this is Game On. Coming up on Larkin gives us the Kilkenny view ahead of the All-Ireland Hurling Final, plus his thoughts on the vacancy in Tipperary as they part ways with Colm Bonner. Darren Cave and Brent Pope set us up for Saturday's deciding test in Wellington as both teams are named. We've the latest on the Irish clubs in European action. And of course, we're live to St Andrews as Rory impresses on day one of the Open. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Yes, a busy show ahead. We'll be heading to the Gulf very shortly, but the Women's Euros are continuing. There is a game ongoing at the moment, Italy and Iceland. David Wilson from RT Sport is in studio with me. And just one goal separating the sides so far.
Yeah, Italy 0, Iceland 1. Iceland took the lead in the third minute. There was a long throw into the box. Italy failed to clear their lines. Rizzucci and Piemonte made a mess of it, and Williams sliced a tricky half volley into the top corner to give the Iceland a lead. They've done really well. You know, they're ranked 17 in the world or 16 in the world. Italy are 14 in the world, so it's definitely not. They're definitely not minnows, but they've really held their own. They drew their first game 1-1 against Belgium. Italy were on the wrong side of a 5-1 loss to France, so it's been a good game. Italy have had more of the ball. They haven't really created that many good chances, but Iceland looked dangerous on the counter-attack. But it's been a good opening half so far.
And as you say, Italy really needs something in this half because a heavy defeat in that opening game.
Yeah, we've seen with England and Norway on Monday, you know, like, it can be a bit of a killer, a bit of a sucker punch, a heavy defeat like that. So Italy really, to stay in the tournament, need to pick up a win because Belgium won't be an easy game in the last game for them either.
Now we've two League of Ireland clubs in action this evening in the Europa Conference League qualifiers. We'll be heading to the showgrounds later in the programme ahead of Sligo Rovers game, but Derry City just underway in their game.
Yeah, just kicked off in Riga in Latvia. They're playing FC Riga. I'll just go through the Derry team very quickly. It's Maher in goal, McJanet, McElhenney and Toll in the back three. Lafferty and Dummigan are the wingbacks. Thompson, Will Patching, McElhenney in midfield, and it's Akintunde and Brandon Kavanagh just off the front. So a big ask for Derry. 2-0 down from the first leg, missing Matty Smith through suspension, missing Michael Duffy with an injury. It's a big ask. Rory Higgins has said that for Derry to go and give it a go, they've had he was part of Stephen Kenny's side that drew 1-1 there in 2009 before in the second leg getting through in the Europa League or in the UEFA Cup back then, or the Europa League. So all to play for, but it's going to be a massive ask for Derry tonight.
Okay, well, you can keep us up to date with that game as the programme progresses. But let's head to St Andrews now. The opening tee shot at the Open Championship was played at about 6.35 this morning, so an early start, and it'll be a late finish as well. Some of the groups going out after 4 p.m. But from an Irish point of view, Rory McIlroy certainly starting in very impressive fashion. And Greg Allen at St Andrews. Greg, I know when you were speaking to Rory ahead of the Open this year, he was speaking about having a strategy to get around St Andrews. Clearly that strategy has worked on day one.
Yeah, and I have to say, Dave, that, you know, he doesn't always get off to great starts in majors. Certainly not up to, say, the Masters in April. He shot 73 in the first round of the Masters, and that really did hamstring him to some degree. He followed it up with a 73 in the second round, and then, of course, it came with that rush of a 64 in the final round and almost got within, you know, touching distance of Scottie Scheffler, and he was rueing the fact that he had got off to such a slow start. But he followed up in the USPGA Championship the following month in May with a 65, led after the first round, opened with a 67 in the US Open, then he opened with a 66 here. So he seems to have shrugged off that habit of getting off to slow starts and not really getting up with the leaders and jostling with the leaders from the very beginning, but here he is right there in second place on his own, around a 66. Only one player is ahead of him, and that's a very talented young American player who's certainly campaigning to be Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour. Cameron Young shot around a 64, and he is the leader on 8 under par. And Young, incidentally, was right in contention in the US PGA Championship at Southern Hills in May, ending up finishing in a tie for third place. So he's also cut his teeth in majors as much as he's cut his teeth on the PGA Tour this season. He's ranked 37th, I think, in the world right now. So Cameron Young, 32nd in the world right now, I should say. So Cameron Young, the leader by two from Rory McIlroy. McIlroy with a 66. And that 66 began with a hold putt from around 55 feet on the first green. And actually it was funny because, you know, such putts really do turn your momentum and your humor. And after he played his wedge shot into the first, and the first is not a very long hole, you know, 370 yards or thereabouts, he really slumped his shoulders and he looked as though, oh, this is not going to be a good start. And then he holds the 55 foot putt, and then he, you know, he steadies up and he birdies three holes in a row, the fifth and the sixth and the seventh. That gets him to four under, and suddenly he's right up there, up and running, drives the green on the 12th, makes a birdie there, it's five under par, and then after dropping a shot on the 13th, which has been statistically the toughest hole on the course today, he had that little champagne-y type of birdie on 18, because champagne-y birdie, and I mean by that, is that the 18th is basically a long par three. He didn't even need driver off the tee to find the edge of the green on the par four finishing hole, the famous par four finishing hole here, and he made birdie there, tapping in from no more than around 2 feet. So McIlroy, a very composed round, it was tricky enough conditions, 66 leaves him two behind Cameron Young. A very good start by Cameron Smith, the ever consistent world number six from Australia, the players champion. He shot around a 67. But although there has been lots of really good scoring today, you know, only Cameron Young has really got away with that from the field with that 64 to some degree, because he actually got to 7 under after 12, and there was certainly the prospect of a really low round. There has never been lower than a round of 62 in a major golf championship, and certainly Cameron Young was threatening that prospect. But he ended up going on a par run from the 12th to the 17th, because that's a fairly tough stretch of the golf course. But Young birdied the 18th for that 64. So firstly, I think we should hear from Rory McIlroy, because this really was another illustration of how he seems to have turned the corner in the way that he is starting majors. And as I said, he's right up there jostling for the lead, two off the pace with that round of 66. And I spoke to him after that round.
I did most things well. I putted well. I thought my touch and my feel today was very good, especially with some of those long putts. You know, I started with a great putt at the first, but then, you know, there was a couple of big two putts in there, you know, some nice chipping. You know, I drove the ball well to put myself in position to be able to attack some of the flags, but it was just a really solid day's play. I didn't really put myself out of position at all, and yeah, you know, it was the ideal start. I'm really happy with what I did today.
You haven't always, in the last few years, been someone who got off to a great start in majors, but this is now an average of 66, the number you shot today for your first round in the last three majors. You also know what comes after this. Where is your mindset with regard to having a good start now?
Yeah, it's a great start, and I think it's just a matter of going out tomorrow and you know, maybe not, you know, I use the words backing it up in the press conference there, but it's more, I'm playing well. I know I'm playing well. I'm going out tomorrow to try to shoot another good round on one of my favorite golf courses in the world. You know, that's really all there is to it. It's I feel like I've progressively gotten better in the majors this year. You know, I led after the first day at the PGA, didn't have a great second day, shot a good score the first day at the US Open, was a little better the second day than I was the second day at the PGA. I think all of those experiences this year, you know, have set me up for a good run at this week, and you know, I'm just glad that I was able to get off to a good start today, and you know, my game's obviously there to go out and shoot another good one tomorrow.
So, Greg, obviously a very encouraging start for Rory McIlroy, less so for Shane Lowry. A disappointing start to his round, but he did get it back to level par.
Yeah, and it was a very disappointing start to his round, because off the second tee, he fired it right off the tee, off the driver face and into a bush. He had to take a penalty drop. But even then, he couldn't make the green from where he was. He could only make it to the front left edge, just about 8 feet off the green, 2 meters or so off the green. And from there, he either chipped or putted up, I think, to around 4 feet, but he missed it. And it was a double bogey, and it was a real sucker punch really early. Then bogeyed the fourth, so he's three over after four holes. And from there on, you know, he did show admirable patience, but you could see the frustration really welling up in him. And it did take quite a while for him to look settled in his round. And there were a few putts inside 8 feet that he didn't hold, but he still managed to cover the last 14 holes in three under to get in on level par. But again, on the 18th green, an 8-footer that would have got him under par for the day just missed on the right edge, the low edge of the hole. So it was in a round of 72 for Shane, and I spoke to him also after that round.
Yeah, I got off the worst possible start and fought back well. Would have been really, really nice to hold that putt in the last. Bad tee shot on the second, didn't really do much wrong after that. I played pretty good for the rest of the day, so I'm pretty happy still with how I'm playing. I know I'm 8 behind, but that's a pretty good score out there today. It's very, very tricky, and
obviously, when you get into an Open Championship, it's different than all the build-up of anticipation in the days beforehand, and you do expect a lot of yourself because you're playing well at the moment. Where do you find your mind and your game and your optimism is right now?
Felt very optimistic going out this morning, and then you're 3 over through 4, you're like, it's not what I wanted, but I thought I was pretty good the way I fought back. I feel pretty good. What's going to win this tournament, I've no idea. Course is only getting firmer, and it's as firm as I've ever seen anything. You're hitting 3 iron down the last there, it's 350 to the pin and you're hitting 3 iron. It's like, I've never seen a golf course like that, so who knows what score is going to win, but if I can shoot a couple of scores in the 60s the next couple of days, I can be thereabouts come Sunday.
And Greg, what about the other Irish in action?
Well, actually, Porter Carrington is going quite well. He's 1 under par after 10, but he's on the 11th green, which is a par 3 right at the far end of the golf course, and a bit of wind is blowing now, and his long putt there looked like it was going to roll up to around 4 feet, but it just caught a ridge and has gone to around 12 feet, and he's actually just holed it as I'm speaking, so about 10, 12 feet, and Harrington walks off the 11th at 1 under par, so that's pretty good for the afternoon starters. Anything under par today, I think, especially out this afternoon where there's a bit of breeze blowing, will make those players quite happy with their afternoon tea time starts. David Carey, the world's number 912th ranked player, 1 under after 6. He's birdied the 6th hole to get under par figures. Ronan Mullarney, the 1806th ranked player in the world, he's tied for that 1806th ranking, is 1 under after 5, and he's just eagled the par 5 5th hole. So the two qualifiers who've battled through qualifying to get into the Open, real fairy tale starts for them, they have both got under par figures on the front nine. Seamus Power, around a 73. He holed a 12-footer for birdie on the first, but got just stalled. He missed a 3-footer on the second green at Horseshoe Out, and he just didn't seem to get any momentum, and he ended up signing for a round of 73. Darren Clark, 5 over after 13. And although he's not Irish, I know there's huge interest in Tiger Woods. Tiger was 6 over par after 8 holes. He dumped a pitching wedge or something like that, short iron, into the burn in front of the green. A burn is a little stream. It really was just a miss hit, a total miss hit. He caught so much ground before the ball, so on Tiger like. But this is only his 8th competitive round in 2022 after that single vehicle car crash in February of last year. So Tiger Woods has actually birdied the 9th and the 10th holes, 2 short par 4s, to get back to 4 over after 10. But the leaderboard, it is an interesting leaderboard, because Cameron Young, very strong player, coming through with lots of talent, cannot be discounted, may not be a familiar name to many players, but he could be around all week. Cameron Young, 64, 8 under par, leads by 2 from Rory McIlroy. Cameron Smith, world number 6, he's always up there, it seems, in majors these days. He shot around a 67 this morning, playing alongside, in fact, Seamus Power with that 73. Barclay Brown, the amateur from Sheffield, he shot around a 68, as did Lee Westwood, who battled back from 2 over after 2 holes to finish with around a 68. Also on that round of 68, that number, Victor Hovland. Dustin Johnson has just birdied the 14th as I'm speaking to get to 4 under par. Ian Poulter shot around a 69, one of the live players like Johnson, and also another live player, Bryson DeChambeau, shot around a 69. And that's much of the composition of the leaderboard, and we do have a strong Irish interest here again in Rory McIlroy, 2 off the lead on 6 under after that 66.
Greg, for the moment, thank you.
Game on.
Hurling. Well, welcome back to Game On. Now, the 2022 All-Ireland Hurling Final is, of course, edging ever closer. Limerick, one win away from a fourth title in 5 years against Kilkenny, bidding for their first Liam McCarthy win since 2015. I'm joined by eight-time All-Ireland winner Owen Larkin to look ahead at the game. But Owen, before we get into Sunday's big clash, obviously big news today in the hurling world. Your reaction to the departure of Colm Bonner from Tipperary?
Yeah, I suppose my reaction first and foremost would be surprise. There's no debate. And they had a tough season, a very difficult season with injuries and, you know, Pádraig Maher retiring at the start of the year due to a long-standing neck issue. So, but look, you know, I suppose Tipperary people in general would have been disappointed with the year they've had. But I don't think anybody expected Colm Bonner to be, as the Tipperary County Board, relieved of his duties. You know, I think it's a bit tasteless and it doesn't really bode well. It doesn't look good from a Tipperary County Board point of view. And I think Colm Bonner really deserved a lot more than what the Tipperary County Board gave him.
So the actual wording of the statement, you'd have some concerns over?
Yeah, I would, because, look, I don't know Colm Bonner personally, but I've met him on one or two occasions. Seems like a really, really nice man. You know, hurling to the core, hurling mad, proud Tipperary man. And I know he was very proud to get the job in the first place. You know, as I said, they had a difficult season, but, you know, they had probably more downs than ups, but... You know, he had brought through a number of young players, which I suppose previous managements, you know, had only thrown in bits and pieces, and he had to bring it all together. And like I said, he had the retirement of Pádraig Maher to deal with. Seamus Callanan was out for most of the year. You know, two hugely experienced lads. So I think Colm Bonner really deserved a lot more, I suppose, than one season. He deserved to get at least another year at it, another crack at it, and I'm sure he'd be very disappointed.
In terms of successors, the names that we're hearing, obviously it's speculation at this stage, but the names that we're hearing, Brendan Cummins and Liam Cahill.
Yeah, those two names will be dished about, all right. I'm not sure what way Liam Cahill is fixed. I heard an interview with him a couple of weeks ago and he sounded like he was mad to get back into the Waterford setup and go again and dust ourselves down and go again is the words he used. So I'm not sure what way that'll play. I'm not sure, would he want to go back in under those circumstances either into the Tipperary camp? Brendan Cummins obviously is another obvious choice, having been down in Kerry for a number of years. So he has a bit of work done on his CV. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out over the next little while. But I'm not sure the Tipperary County Board have done themselves any favours trying to... With the wording of that statement and giving Colm Bonner 1 year, I'm not sure that they'll have too many lads, you know, banging the door down to get in there.
Okay, let's move on to the big game now on Sunday, of course, the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Final, Limerick against Kilkenny. On the success that Brian Cody has had under his stewardship at Kilkenny, obviously phenomenal, 11 All-Ireland titles. Where would you rank this achievement for him if Kilkenny were to win on Sunday?
Look, I think it'd top most of what he's done, because for one start off, we haven't won an All-Ireland since 2015. So 7 years in Kilkenny is a long, long spell, especially, as you said, under Brian Cody. And, you know, Limerick are the dominant team at the moment and have been for the last 4 to 5 years. And all Kilkenny caught them maybe in 2019, but ultimately Kilkenny didn't go on to win the All-Ireland, and Limerick have dominated ever since. You know, they seem to be the full package. They seem to have everything, physicality, whatever way you want to throw it at them, they can deal with it. And you know, from a personal point of view, I didn't see Kilkenny beating Clare in the semi-final, but they came up with one huge performance. I just hope that they've saved some in reserve. On the other hand, Limerick have gone to the well a couple of times this year in the Munster final and the last day in the semi-final against Galway. You know, you'd imagine that Brian Cody will just be telling the players, bring him to the well once more and see is there anything left. And if they can do that, they have a great chance, but they will have to bring him to that well.
And what would the level of expectation have been in Kilkenny before this year's championship?
It would have been low, I suppose. it would have been low from Kilkenny supporters and things, you know. So, like I said before, 7 years is a long time to since before winning an All-Ireland, and it would have been very low. I think it was more hopeful than confident going in. But look, the players really stepped up in the All-Ireland semi-final against Clare. I know Clare were poor on the day, but you can only play against what's in front of you. And Kilkenny produced a magnificent performance in the first half against Clare. But like I said, Sunday is going to be... it's going to be another huge battle, and I'm sure the Kilkenny players will realise that, and hopefully they can get another big performance out now on Sunday.
Of course, Brian Cody is such a giant in hurling in terms of what he's achieved, and you know, being in charge of Kilkenny for so long, and clearly he's a key figure going into this game. Now, the public persona of Cody would be that he's clearly very driven, very successful, steely resolved. In your own career, though, would you have seen a different side to his character?
Ah, yeah, look, there's plenty of different sides to Brian. You know, he's passionate about what he does. He's passionate about the job he has. And he has to make decisions based on that job. And he feels if he doesn't make those decisions that, you know, he's not doing the job correctly or properly, and he shouldn't be in the job. And that's the reason he has that steely persona, and, you know, has dropped lads over the years for big matches and dropped lads off the panel and all that kind of stuff. But look, personally, myself, I've gone through a tough time, and he has been one of the lads that has helped me through it. I know for a fact he's helped an awful lot of other lads, you know, with jobs, things like that as well. So, you know, he has that softer side as well, but maybe doesn't like to lay on that soft side is there. But, you know, lads that are close to him and have played for him know that it is there, but still they know he has that steely side as well, and you just don't get on the wrong side of Brian Cody, you know, when he's trying to do the job he's doing. And that's the way he sees it, that's the way he wants it, and that's the way it has always been. So but like I said, look, there's plenty of good sides to Brian, as well as, I suppose, lots of the bad sides that people would think. But, you know, for him to do the job he's doing, he feels it's necessary.
And I'm just thinking of some of the players on Sunday who, you know, haven't won in All-Ireland. This will be maybe a new experience for them. The wealth of experience that Brian Cody has will surely give those players a lot of comfort, and they can take, you know, great heart from the fact that he's done so much and he's been there so many times before.
Absolutely, and that's the confidence that comes out from Brian Cody. You know, he uses confidence, you know, and that seeps into the players as well. You know, if you go back to 2006, there were probably three quarters of the panel that hadn't won All-Ireland either when we played. But, you know, Brian had an unwavering belief in us that we were going to be Cork that day, and that seeped out into the players, and it's seeped out in on Croke Park on the Sunday, and eventually we got over the line, you know, against a really, really experienced Cork team going for three in a row. So, you know, it's kind of similar in some ways that, you know, they're probably the Kilkenny team going out on Sunday will probably be inexperienced in regards to All-Ireland success, but Brian has been there and done that, and no doubt he will pass on the confidence that they need to get a good performance out on Sunday. And, you know, he will feel if we get a good performance out and work as hard as we possibly can, he will feel that we can definitely win this game.
Of course, from a Limerick point of view, the big story emerging over the last 24 hours or so, the injury concern for Keane Lynch. Do you think Cody has a game plan to play Limerick with Lynch in it, in the Limerick team, obviously, or a second game plan without Lynch in the Limerick team?
No, I think he'd probably have. I think he'd probably have factored in Keane Lynch to be fit. You know, it's probably a distraction more so for Limerick than it is Kilkenny, because Brian would always be of the opinion if you're going to win, you win against the best 15 or the best 22 or whatever. And he will hope that Keane Lynch is fit to play and fully fit to play, and that hopefully Kilkenny can go over the line with him there. But the plan will definitely include Keane Lynch, because as we've seen the last day, he came on and had a very positive impact in the game for Limerick to win that game. So he will definitely have that plan, and the players will be well aware of that plan. Keane Lynch enter the field, and like I said, you know, he will hope that Keane Lynch is fully fit to play, and hopefully can get over the line with a fully fit Limerick panel that they can hopefully beat.
Now, I suppose Brian Cody himself is the only man who can answer this next question. But as we said, he's been in charge since 1998. If Limerick were to be defeated at the weekend with Kilkenny winning the All-Ireland, it would be right up there in terms of all the achievements of Cody's career. Do you think that perhaps he might say, well, I mean, why not quit now? Why not go out at the top?
I just don't see it in the man. He's still as highly motivated, as highly passionate about hurling, and he feels he's the right man for the job, and still does. And I don't think winning or losing on Sunday will have any impact on next year or the year after that. I think he'll stay there as long as he feels he's the right man for the job. He doesn't, like I said before, he doesn't let sentiment come into it. It will be about winning the 2022 All-Ireland final on Sunday, and if that happens to come true, he will enjoy it. He'll take time, and I'm pretty sure we'll see him back ratified at a county board meeting in early November.
And just give me a sense of the, you know, atmosphere in Kilkenny and the feeling in Kilkenny the last few years, because, as we said, 2015 for Kilkenny not to have won in All-Ireland since 2015 is a real drought. You know, what's the public perception been of the teams of the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years?
Asher, look, it's been disappointing over the last couple of years. You know, people start out at the start of the year and they're all hoping that we'll get to an All-Ireland, and it hasn't happened for the last number of years. So, look, I wouldn't say we're confident, we're quietly hopeful that we'll get a good performance out. And I think if we get a good performance and we play very, very well, and if we come up short, I think Kilkenny people will be happy. Obviously, if we can go over the line, it will make it all the more sweeter. But I think Kilkenny people in general now are happier this year than they have been in the last couple of years with the Kilkenny performances and the way Kilkenny are going about their business. So I think they'll be happy that we're just building process. We've got to an All-Ireland final, and hopefully, win, lose or draw on Sunday, hopefully we can move on another step next year.
And will you be at the game yourself?
I'm hoping to get up there, Sean, yeah. I'm hoping to get up there. A few things to tie up with work and things like that. So hopefully we'll get up there, but no doubt I'll see it one way or another.
Well, listen, enjoy the day. And as I said, it's an eagerly awaited clash of Kilkenny and Limerick in the 2022 All-Ireland Senior Hurling Final. Owen Larkin, thank you.
Game on 2FM.
Derry City are facing an uphill task if they are to remain in the Europa Conference League qualifiers. They are 2-0 down from the first leg against Riga. 6 o'clock kickoff. David Wilson is in studio with me. Any goals so far?
No goals so far, Dave. About 34 minutes gone. Derry have had plenty of the ball, but haven't just created or haven't scored. McIntyre had a great chance. He broke through clear on goal. He put a shot wide. He had an effort a couple minutes before that he scuffed. But Derry are starting pretty well. An early goal would have been ideal, though.
There has been a goal, however, in the second half in the Women's Euros game.
Yeah, Italy have equalised. That old adage in football, Iceland just missed the chance. 5 yards out, had the goal at her mercy and put it wide. Less than a minute later, Italy went up the other end. Bonasegna on the left wing crossed, and Bergamaschi came kind of running through the middle and finished it really well with a side-footed finish. And it's 1-1 with about just 9.5 minutes left to go.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that game and obviously the Derry City game. And we'll be speaking to Jessica Farry at the showgrounds ahead of Sligo Rovers game shortly. But now let's move on to the big rugby international, of course, at the weekend. Ireland against New Zealand in the deciding test match. The Ireland team named overnight. Bundy Aki coming into the starting 15, and the only change to the side that won the second test last weekend, as expected. Key comes in place of Gary Ringrose, who was ruled out due to a concussion sustained last weekend in that victory in Dunedin. Let's hear from the Ireland head coach, Andy Farrell.
It really doesn't get any better for us. Like, you know, we've all talked about playing against the All Blacks when the backs are against the wall or they've come off a loss, and we know what the history says about all that, but like that's exactly where we want to be. We know that they'll be hurting. We know that they bounce back unbelievably strong. We've played them enough times now to realise what's coming. But to have them in the last game before we break, when we expect them to be fired up, wanting to prove a point to us and to themselves, it couldn't be any better for us.
Now, one familiar voice is, of course, that of Brent Pope's familiar New Zealand voice, of course. He's currently back home and he has sent us his thoughts on the series so far.
Game on.
Rugby.
Going back to my original thoughts on the first game that Ireland played, I thought they actually played a lot better than some of the reports that were going back to Ireland. I thought they showed, especially in the first half, that they really dominated the match. And then the same thing happened again in the second test, where for the first 20 or 30 minutes, Ireland were exceptional and completely outplayed New Zealand. I don't think it's been years since I've been in this country and seen the All Black side so comprehensively beaten. Also, Ireland made history, and Johnny Sexton made history, and that was great for him coming to the twilight of his career. But the manner in which they won it was so emphatic that New Zealand is obviously worried about coughing up a series loss. Because I think the history dictates that the series loss before the World Cup is hugely damaging for New Zealand rugby, because Ireland are in a lot more comfortable place leading into a World Cup that's only months away now, well, a season away or so, but I mean New Zealand are an unenviable position of not still getting their selections as they want them. Their combinations don't seem to be working. What surprises me the most is that if they had looked researched the way that Leinster have lost matches, it's probably been when they've been out-muscled. La Rochelle and the South African sides in the United League just put up big physical packs against Leinster, and Leinster came unstuck at the wrong time. All Black rugby hasn't tried to do that. In fact, they've selected a side in Dunedin under the roof that was trying to move Ireland around the field, and Ireland's defence was brilliant. To such an extent, they should have had a penalty try. You know, that was obviously a penalty try if Johnny Sexton could have offloaded to Gary Ringrose, because there was nobody in the back line for defence for the All Blacks, so it was a certain try. And the ruling there is, would a try probably have been scored? And the answer is, yes, it would have. So, look, I'm predicting what I predicted for the second test. I think, you know, is this All Black team able to give a backlash or a blacklash? I don't think so. And I think this is, if Ireland can start well again and get on top of the All Blacks, and I think the All Blacks' lack of experience in certain areas, including captaincy, might just, well, not experience in terms of captaincy, but, you know, Sam Kane, if selected, really needs to deliver a Richie McCaw-type performance this week. But so New Zealand rugby needs this series win. Ireland rugby needs this series win, but it would be a huge confidence booster than looking at next season in the World Cup. I mean, and Andy Farrell could suddenly pencil in a number of players that showed against the Māori the other night that they're up to this level of rugby and can complement the test side. So that was a really successful part of the series too, to win that, square that series against the Māori. But yeah, I think Ireland can win this series, and I'll certainly be wearing green. I've got to do some interviews around the All Blacks before the match, but I'll have my green scarf and hat on, because I've spent more years in Ireland than I have in New Zealand now. So I'd be delighted if Ireland managed to win a series win, because not many teams over the history of All Black rugby have managed to do that, and certainly Ireland hasn't. So they've already created history, and I'm looking forward to them just pushing on and creating a bit more history. That would remain their legacy, and for players like Johnny Sexton and Keith Earls that have been around the team for a number of years, what a wonderful memory or legacy to leave when you retire from the game. So good luck, Ireland, and I'll be at the match, and I'll be proud to be wearing my Irish green.
Game on.
Rugby.
Nice to hear that Brent Pope will be donning the green for the big game at the weekend. Let's get the views now of former Ireland international Darren Cave. Evening, Darren.
Evening, how are you getting on?
Good, thanks. So, first of all, just in terms of the team selection, I suppose no real surprises in the Ireland team for the weekend.
No, the only one, and it's going to sound like a
potentially a stupid one. I just wondered, especially given the result on Tuesday, well, I know Ireland want to go on and win the series, but to win a game in New Zealand, the first time ever, phenomenal achievement, and to beat the Maoris on Tuesday, I just wondered, was there a little slight inkling that he might play Joey Carberry? Shows why I'm a pundit, not a coach. Because for me, that's still the one question mark. Just, you know, can we, going into a World Cup, survive without Johnny Sexton?
From a New Zealand point of view, considerable amount of changes, I suppose. Four from the team that lost at the weekend.
Yeah, and I have to hold my hand up. I was very much wrong when this tour started. When I saw the fixtures coming in and the two extra games, five games in New Zealand, long season. We had a couple of players dropping like flies. We couldn't get players over because of travel chaos. And then the first two games went against us. I was worried this whole thing was going to be an absolute shambles and it was going to do more harm than good. I'm delighted to be wrong. And here we're sitting with, you know, and you're looking at the two teams, and it's amazing how things can change. And I do think, you know, we have been so accustomed to New Zealand being one of the best, probably, sporting teams in professional sport of all time. But you look through that team, and it's not really a team that you should be absolutely shaking in your boots for.
So are you saying the fear factor is probably gone now?
I definitely think so. And again, I was guilty of thinking back to when I was playing, when the All Blacks, from an Irish point of view, were unbeatable. Never mind, in New Zealand, we did come close in 2012, but really it had never happened and it was almost laughable. And I look through that team now, and yes, you've still got the likes of Retallick and Whitelock, but I just think maybe at the time we didn't realise how good, you know, the McCaw era, in inverted commas, were. And I definitely think that there is not the fear factor there, you know, from any team, but particularly Ireland. This New Zealand team, I think, have lost three of their last four, two of them to us and one of them in France. And to be honest with you, all three of those four defeats, it wasn't that close. I would be surprised if New Zealand had ever been so comprehensively beating three times in four in the last 15 years, to be honest with you.
Of course, it's well documented it took Ireland over a century to beat the All Blacks, but Ireland have now beaten New Zealand four times in the last seven meetings, which tallies with what we're talking about. But having said all that, they are still the All Blacks, and surely they will respond with some ferocity at the weekend.
So it's funny you say that. That was my excuse for not backing Ireland going into the tour. It's kind of like, it feels like it's not a sort of a really technically opinion, but it does count for a lot. They are the All Blacks, and you are in New Zealand. And yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. There's, as much as I think Ireland have a chance and could do a job of the weekend, this New Zealand team, I think it's really, really interesting to see how they're going to react. The public are on their back. I always felt that the New Zealand public and team, they loved Ireland because we were the wee paddies and we couldn't beat them. And I think it's very, very interesting just to see the dynamic swing, and you can see their media sort of turning on Foster, the coach, and turning on the players. And I just think it's quite enjoyable to watch from an Irish point of view.
If the result does go Ireland's way at the weekend, where would you rank that achievement in terms of not only Irish rugby, but Irish sporting history?
It's seriously high up there, and it's interesting over the last 24 hours hearing people debating this sort of a nothing question, if you will, but is winning a series in New Zealand a bigger deal than getting to the semi-final of the World Cup? And as I said, it's kind of a nothing argument, but it is interesting. Thinking, and I really think that if Ireland can do it, I think back to when England won the World Cup in 2003, I remember the summer before, they had a really good Southern Hemisphere tour, and I do feel once you get to a World Cup, Ireland are not, it doesn't matter how strong France are, it doesn't matter how strong South Africa are, Ireland will not be scared of those teams. Ireland have consistently beaten those teams, albeit those teams are pretty strong at the minute, over the last 10 or 15 years. If we can get this stage going into a World Cup, where we're, you know, five of the last eight against New Zealand, I think really deep down psychologically it puts you in such a strong position. Again, just to kind of finish where I started, the big concern for me with this Irish team, like, I thought the first passage of play at the weekend just sums it up, how the quality of some of Ireland's play, but just how integral Johnny Sexton is to it. He's just phenomenal. His level of performance and leadership, particularly at that age, it's absolutely absurd, to be frank. And the over-reliance we have on him is a huge concern for me. And it's all very well playing Joey Carberry, you know, here and again and bringing him on for 6 minutes at the weekend when Sexton has a dead leg. But that is not going to win you a World Cup if something happens to Johnny Sexton in a year's time in France.
And briefly, Darren, how do you call it?
Oh, jeepers. No matter what I say, I'm normally wrong. But I'm going to go with my heart here and I'm going to back Ireland after last week. And hopefully, apologies if I've just scuttered them.
Darren, let's hope you're right. And certainly, as we said, would be a fantastic achievement if Ireland were to come away with that series win in New Zealand. Darren Cave, thank you.
Cheers.
And that game is live on 2FM, a Game On special on Saturday morning. Ireland against New Zealand in the deciding test match.
Game On on 2FM.
We'll have news of a goal in the Derry City game in a moment, but Sligo Rovers are also in action tonight in the Europa Conference League qualifiers. They are facing Ballantyne at the Showgrounds, and there for us is Jessica Farry.
It's a sellout here at the Showgrounds for this Europa Conference League tie between Sligo Rovers and Ballantyne. It's advantage to the Bitter Red after they brought a 2-1 win home from the picturesque town of Oswest Street on the England-Wales border as they played their tie in TNS's ground, Park Hall. Rovers went behind after 5 minutes in that tie, but manager John Russell was thrilled with how his side responded to going behind. Almost 500 fans travelled to watch Sligo take on their Welsh counterparts last week in what was an incredible atmosphere. New Bitter Red manager Russell is yet to lose a game since taking over from Liam Buckley, and despite playing part-time opposition who are in pre-season, he won't be counting his chickens just yet. Rovers have only progressed through a round in Europe once, that was in 2014, while Ballantyne hold a similar record. They got through the first round in 2020, but they played just one leg due to COVID-19 regulations. For the host, Nando Pineacker is suspended after he was dismissed last week, so Gary Buckley comes in his place. Estonian international Frank Livak makes a first start for the Bitter Red. He replaces Will Fitzgerald. Ballantyne too make two changes from last week's side. Callum Woods and Oliver Shannon miss out, while Bradley Burris and Oliver Southern come in. We'll have kick-off here at the Showgrounds at 7 p.m.
Jessica Farry reporting there. The Derry City game kicked off at 6 p.m. There has been a goal. David Wilson, you can tell us about it.
Yeah, just as we came off this, just seconds after Derry went 1-0 down, Gabriel Ramos, who scored in the first leg, has scored again. Douglas Aurelio went down the left, played it back to Glorian Gonda, and he cut it back to Ramos, who calmly converted into the net. 2 minutes after that, the Latvian side's goalkeeper Thomas Purins received a bad back pass. He played it straight to Kavanagh, and the Derry man hit the crossbar. So Derry are probably unlucky not to at least get one goal in this half. But 3-0 down with just 45 minutes to go, it's going to be a tough ask.
Certainly, yeah, long way back for Derry City in that one. The women's Euros game has been completed.
Yeah, full time in the Manchester City Etihad Campus Stadium. Italy won, Iceland won. It's a point that's probably not great for either team, but it's probably a better point for Italy. They need to beat Belgium in the last game to qualify, while Iceland will face a mammoth task of playing France to try and qualify for the next round. Iceland defended really well, gave it absolutely everything, put their bodies on the line. Really should have went 2-0 up before Italy got the equaliser, and then when Italy did get the equaliser, they'd probably look like the team most likely to score. But in fairness, it was a really battling performance from Iceland. The pictures here on the screen, they're devastated not to hold on and win that game. But it was a really good game again, and that kind of leads us now to France and Belgium now this evening at 8 o'clock, which is on RT2.
And a word on Aaron Connolly.
Yeah, Aaron Connolly has made the move to yet another Irish player that's made the move to Italy. He'll be playing in Serie B next season. He's gone on a season-long loan to Venezia, the team in Venice. So he'll have he was pictured on a gondola the other day. So he's already acclimatized to his new city. Being from Galway, I suppose he's used to a nice port city like that. So it's a chance for him to reinvigorate his career. He really needs to kind of hit the ground running. It didn't go well for him in Middlesbrough last year under Chris Wilder. Venezia will be challenging for promotion into back to Serie A. They've got a fairly sizable budget. And if he wants to get back into an Ireland team, that have a lot of competition in the striking department now. He's going to have to try and score some goals and improve, because last season and the previous season before that hasn't gone so well for him.
Yeah, certainly. We wish him well in his move there to Italy. Now, the Open, of course, continuing at St Andrews. We can check on the progress of Padraig Harrington with Greg Allen.
I'm going to actually start with the progress of Ronan Mullarney, the world's number 1,806th ranked player. There's a reason for this, Dave. He's just birdied the 7th and the 8th. Now, Ronan Mullarney has had a really tough time as a pro, former Irish Close champion. He's currently tied for 11th in the Open. So this Galway man, who has actually won a round St Andrews in the St Andrews Scholars Tournament 3 years ago, the RNA Scholars Tournament, is touching the top 10 on 3 under par. That's just a moment ago he birdied the 8th. Harrington also going well. He had to hole about an 8 or 9 foot putt, as reported earlier, on the 11th green, the par 3, and then he went and birdied the 8th, where a very short par 4. And this is why, you know, you might get a little bit excited about a player like Ronan Mullarney, whose life would be transformed if he even made the cut here, I think, because he has made very few cuts, even on the EuroPro Tour. But he has actually not made a cut on any tour higher than the EuroPro Tour. And that's the third tier tour in European golf. It would be utterly transformative if he could make the cut here, I think, and
it's
have a
weekend.
It's a
fantastic story, Greg, isn't it? I mean,
it's early days.
Yeah,
David,
absolutely. But in terms of a dream start.
Oh, you see these youngsters, and you know that they dream. They plug away at a very, very difficult task, trying to be a pro golfer, which, you know, when you go on that EuroPro Tour, it's almost a loss-making exercise unless you're in the top 5 every week. So it's a tough road to get to the European Tour or even the Challenge Tour. And Ronan Mullarney having, obviously, the first 8 holes of his life by the looks of things. 3 under after 8. Also, by the way, David Carey, the world's number 912th ranked player, as I said earlier in the programme, he's level par through 8 holes as well. I might just check to see if he's a little bit more advanced than that. But certainly at the moment we've had Rory McIlroy, 6 under after that, 66. 2 off the leader, Cameron Young. Not such a good start for Shane Lowry, a 72, but he's got plenty of holes tomorrow and hopefully over the weekend to try and get into a position here to challenge. But the lead is 8 shots away from him at this point. David Carey, incidentally, has just birdied the 9th hole, the short par 4, near the top end of the course, the very far end of the golf course from where the clubhouse is. So now David Carey, 912th in the world, is under par figures, 1 under after 9. So two of our players who are under par are, you know, players whose lives would be transformed if they had a good week here. Padraig Harrington, as we know, twice an Open champion. He's just birdied the 12th, as I said, and he's going very nicely in the slightly more difficult afternoon conditions of breeze here. But there's no question that Rory McIlroy is the story of this first round from the Irish perspective. That round of 66, the 55-foot putt that went in the first green, he then birdied the 5th, the 6th, the 7th, and he also went on to birdie the 12th, 14th and 18th. There was one bogey in there, but Rory, such a composed round. He's on 66, 2 off the leader, Cameron Young, and the very, very consistent Cameron Smith of Australia on 67, the players' champion, a real danger man in terms of Rory McIlroy over the weekend. But do not discount Cameron Young. He's a very fine player, and he's leading here on 8 under par after a 64.
And very briefly, Greg, in terms of the way the course set up today, there was talk beforehand that the scoring would be very, very low. I know the pin placements today were quite tricky. How do you think the course fared today?
Well, firstly, Dave, there have been light breezes all day. They had hoped for a stronger breezes. They were forecast earlier in the week that they would have stronger breezes, but there were light breezes today. So they set up pin positions really, really difficult today. And because of that, we haven't seen anybody, you know, shoot or have a prospect other than Cameron Young of shooting a major championship course record, because there are people here who are capable of shooting 60 or 61 around here if we get a becalmed day over the next 3 days. Today, Cameron Young got to 7 under after 12. If he had pressed on and got to, say, 9 under with a birdie on the 14th or, you know, into that territory, he would have had the 18th to come to equal the lowest round ever shot in a major, which is a 62 by Brandon Grace in the Open Championship in Royal Birkdale back in 2017. That was on today for Cameron Young, but he was the only player who got close to it. And the course set up tomorrow, I don't think, is going to be any easier than it is today, because the old course is old, Dave, and it is certainly vulnerable to these players with the new technology and their talent to a very, very low round. And there's even people talking that there's possibly a 59 to be shot around St Andrews. Maybe not this week because it's firm and bouncy, and that means it's tricky.
Greg, we leave it there for the moment. My thanks to the Game On team, David Wilson, Laura Lee Davis, Ronan Lawler, and to Conor Halpin for pushing the right buttons here in studio. Tara Kumar is up next.